Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. If you want to catch us live, you can always catch us on buildingfortunesradio.com/live. And if you want to call in, you can always call in to the same phone number for all of our radio shows, 347-237-4097. That's 347-237-4097. Today is going to be a special call because we're going to start off a series of calls that are a little bit unrelated to the typical things that we talk about on Building Fortunes Radio. On Building Fortunes Radio, for those people that might be first-time listeners, my name is Peter Mingles. About 6 or 7 years ago, I started this radio show for me and for people in the industry. It was really a little bit like a therapy session for me. I wanted to have a platform to be able to hear people hear about the great things that happen and the great people that happen in the world of home-based businesses, entrepreneurs, things like that. And I knew because we used the term building that we'd build it to whatever we wanted to build it to. So 6 or 7 years ago, depending on when you're listening to this, we started Building Fortunes Radio with some of our PM Marketing customers. So if you're looking at buildingfortunesradio.com and you see a lot of things about home-based businesses, that's our roots, if you will, where we got started. But because we deal with people and because as a person who's worked with people, if you will, I playfully say this my whole entire adult life, you deal with real people, like real issues, and issues that happen in business affect business, issues that happen at home affect business, whether you like it or not, if you're the employer, if you're the customer, or things along that line. So when we started to do this, we have a gentleman, we do anti-MLM stuff. We do a lot of stuff with network marketing and home-based businesses. I have a gentleman that we talk about with vaccines. His name is Alan Phillips. We have a gentleman who runs an organization called Citizens.org. Citizens.org is a website. Citizens for Health is Jim Turner. He's like a Ralph Nader Raider. Originally was a Ralph Nader Raider for those people old enough to remember Ralph Nader. Just an amazing assortment of people, everything from health and nutrition to physical fitness to people with different disabilities. So it's a really great spectrum, if you will, of topics. We've even dove into the dark subjects like child sex trafficking and some of the cult relationships associated with the business model associated with MLM. So I have two gals on the radio today with us, Melissa and Michelle. And as a result of our conversations, I've said, you know what, I really want to branch out and have a conversation about this. And this meaning domestic abuse, domestic violence, challenges at home, that wide spectrum of issues, because each one of these gals have some personal situations and experiences related to this. And I know that because of the home-based business environment and because I know that we have a lot of women that listen to this radio show because they're involved in home-based businesses, I know there's a lot of our Building Fortunes radio listening audience listening to our shows and probably could get some help or advice from this radio show. So we'll do this radio show, whatever frequency we do, we'll have it on a special logo on Building Fortunes Radio, and I'm just doing this little bit of a longer introduction because I want our Building Fortunes Radio listening audience to mean that, you know, we talk about a lot of things that might be able to change your life as far as health and nutrition or financing, but this one, listen to at the right time by the right person, might actually help save a life, and that's why we're doing it. So it's going to be a different type of a call. We'll keep it as interesting as we possibly can, even in the darker moments. We'll keep it as generic as possible to protect the people who might need to, you know, as we have guests, those people that want to stay anonymous. We'll give out some resources as specific as we can for those people who need some help. But I just want to throw out on this one as I continue with our little introduction, nothing we say on this radio show or if you're listening to it as a podcast is designed to defame anybody, slander anyone. We're not making any medical claims. We're not attorneys. We're giving you no legal advice. We don't even know who you are if you're listening in. So if you need some help, please seek that help. And I want to throw out all those disclaimers out there to just say, listen in, learn, and take the information and apply it as you best may. And for those people that really need it, you might have them plug in as well, because it's probably more than you know. And the deeper I dive into this, the more I realize how it does spider out into things like a whole bunch of things that we'll talk about as we go through our radio show. So the first thing I want to do is I want to introduce Michelle and Melissa. Thanks for being here on our radio show.
Hey, hello. Thanks, Peter. Hi, this is Melissa.
Thank you.
Michelle, you want to say
hello to you?
Hi, yep. I'm Michelle.
Yep.
Thank you, Peter.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Thanks so much for having us here.
Yeah. You're welcome. Now, this is our first radio. Yeah, so hold on one second. This is our first radio show. So our Building Fortunes radio listening audience, we'll be talking over each other a few times as we're getting ready for this. We're talking from different locations. We have different things to say. So expect those awkward moments. It will be quiet. But I'll kick it off by saying Melissa probably is the one that will take over a little bit of this, and then we'll introduce Michelle as well. So, Melissa, why don't you go first, and then we'll bring Michelle in. She's a little bit more nervous. So she'll get more comfortable as she hears that this is just...
You know me so well already, huh, Michelle? Isn't it funny?
Yeah.
I got it.
This is Melissa, and Michelle and I are friends, and we're just so excited to be here today and to be invited by Peter on the show because, actually, she and I haven't known each other that long, but we met in a domestic violence, and we have been a support for each other, and we have come to kind of rely on each other and learn about more from each other about, you know, what our encounters were, what kind of abuse that we were both exposed to, and really, more importantly, how to get out of it. Because we met, both of us, coming out of these pretty horrific domestic violence situations. So that was part of the inspiration for us wanting to do this with Peter because, you know, I have this saying, geez, you know, we need somebody to breathe life back into us because being part of a domestic violence relationship is, you know, it just knocks the wind out of you. And, you know, I know that it wasn't that long ago that I had pretty much given up hope in every area of my life and I had to make a decision, you know, am I going to go on and live this way or is there another way? What can I do to get my life back, you know, to live again, breathe fresh air again. And, you know, we've found some solutions and we're coming out and it is not an overnight process, but there is a way. And Michelle, I'm just so grateful to know you and, you know, for you to be a part of my journey in coming out of this.
I feel the same.
So, cool. Thank you. You know, I thought it would be good for us to start out, at least talking about this as part of an education part, because you know what? I know that when I first went to the Women's Center, you know, I didn't really feel like I was involved or I didn't realize that I was involved in a domestic violence situation until it got physical. You know what I'm talking about, Michelle?
Yeah.
Like that for you too? Yeah, because, you know, when we think domestic violence, we think of the woman with the black eye, right, you know, where we've got bruises and broken bones and blood. And of course, you know, when that happened, I realized that I was, in fact, in a domestic violence situation. But after seeking some help for myself, you know, when we go to these groups at the women's centers, they started to teach us. I realized they taught me that domestic violence isn't just the physical piece, you know, that the entire circle of violence, okay, the circle of abuse involves not only the physical, but emotional abuse, financial abuse, sexual abuse, spiritual abuse. And then also, in a lot of circumstances, it involves children and pets. And, you know, when I started to take all of this in, little bit by bit, and listen to what these therapists, these group leaders had to say, I came to understand that, you know, the physical abuse was just, I think of that as the form of abuse that, like, the light switch went on. It went flip, and I realized, what I was in, because it sort of became official for me then, right? When I had that black eye, when I got run over by that car, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that was when it became safe for me to go, oh, okay, you know what? I am an abuse victim. You know what I'm talking about, Michelle? You want to talk a little bit about that too? Did you have that same kind of revelation ever or something similar?
Yes, definitely. I started learning that when I went to the a women's shelter, and I didn't really understand really. I was very lost in exactly what was going on, but I knew inside that there was something definitely off. And so, it's amazing the resources out there that
mm-hmm.
are available when you actually like reach out and
yeah.
decide. But it takes a lot of courage. Like it's not been easy. Like really.
Oh no.
Very, very. Yeah.
I agree with you too. It's terrifying to walk into one of those places, to make a phone call to mm-hmm. a place and actually show up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a good time for us to, I'm going to throw this out. I went and found this before our show started, but there are local versions of this, but there is a national domestic violence hotline, and
mm-hmm.
we can call that 24/7. It's 1-800-799-SAFE, S-A-F-E. So 1-800-799-SAFE. And I guess as we go more in the show, we can share more of those resources, but at the very least, we can start out with that one where someone can call like 24/7 and talk to an advocate. At least
mm-hmm.
someone is going to listen, right? Did you call those hotlines too?
Yes, I did. And also the other thing is that it's not gender-based either. So that's another very important thing, like that, that to even the Women's Center also has resources for men and women and children, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, and that's what's a lot of people don't, like, I didn't realize that, and that's been part of my learning through this journey.
Yeah.
Like,
and
yeah,
that's a good point. I'm glad you brought mm-hmm. that up, because we do usually
yep.
just think in terms of the woman being the receiver of the abuse, but it really does go both ways, or it can go both ways.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, for some of those people listening in, we're going to do a lot of these radio shows, so we're not going to try to cram everything into 30 minutes or something like that. So this is the kind of radio show you just kind of listen to and experience, and it'll probably open up a whole bunch of things in your own mind. But I know as a result of me talking about this, and probably, you know, the government to grabbing all my conversations and transcribing them, I've seen more articles in my news feed on domestic violence and domestic abuse. You know, it's not something
mm-hmm.
that I'm looking for actively, but it just seems like they're popping up all over the place, or they are really all over the place. So
right.
there's a point in your time where you were who you were and you weren't being abused, and then the time that you finally took that action. But how long of a time frame did you go from who you knew who you were before? Like, for instance, I knew Michelle when she was a little girl. And then, you know, because we moved and all that sort of stuff, I didn't find out about this until way later. So there's a whole bunch of years, maybe even a couple of decades involved in between. But for, you know, either, you know, Melissa or Michelle, how long did it take for you to enter that relationship before you finally made that decision? Like, oh, my gosh. That person that needs to make that phone call, because there's probably a whole bunch of denial for a whole bunch of time beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, you know, let's go with Melissa first. Melissa, you know, how long was
okay.
it for you? Because I think you were like a regular person before you were a victim
person.
Of this. Yeah, right?
Oh, that's funny. A regular person. I'm sorry, you made me laugh. I know what you mean by that, but okay. Were you finished, Peter?
Yes, I'm done.
With the question, okay. You know, I don't, to kind of keep with your vernacular, I don't know that I ever really consider myself a regular person.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
That's the reason why I kind of joke about that, but I mean it with sincerity. When I look back, because I consider myself to be fairly decently informed and experienced about abuse now, okay? And I'm in my late 40s. I look back and I can see evidence of abuse throughout my whole life. So it's not just one single relationship, you know. Now, not as much physical abuse, but definitely emotional abuse and other from my own family, okay, from my parents, from my family of origin that I grew up in. And I kind of think of it this way, to oversimplify, that was normal for me. Mm-hmm. So as I became older, I was attracted to and felt comfortable and familiar with those same patterns of behavior and treatment towards me when I married my first husband at 26 and divorced him at 31 and married my second husband at 43 and divorced him at 45. And so I experienced a variety of abuse in both of those relationships.
Wow.
And so, you know, I guess you could say that there is a pattern of behavior that I have as well as attract and, you know, and that I've drawn to, unfortunately, that's it's been present in my life. So it's not just a single relationship. It's occurred in a variety of them.
Right.
So that's why to help, I feel like. Oh, we'll let Michelle talk. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Michelle.
How long were you a normal person, Michelle, or regular?
Yeah.
I was the average person. I don't think I ever was. I've always been kind of like,
yeah.
I've kind of always been the, I've never felt like I fit in really, but because I've always been questioned, like the system or whatever, or, you know, questioned like, okay, is that's, you know, I've always questioned if anything's off or whatever. But and the thing is that I've seen it like as that pattern of a behavior as well in my family as well. So mm-hmm. I always understood and tried to be understanding. To understand, like, that's not their fault. Like, that was learned. I could see the pattern that was being learned. So, but I guess I think it was like 18 years, and I kept on blaming myself, but thinking, you know, because relationships have to do with, you know, everyone involved, really, you know, so, but it wasn't until I really reached out and like at the women's shelter and things like that, like mm-hmm. for those type of resources to learn that it's more than just my fault. Like if that makes any sense.
Well, I'm kind of itching in my seat right now wanting to interrupt you as you say that, because
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say this with conviction. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking to you and anybody else who may be listening out there who is being abused, thinks they could potentially be or know somebody. Nobody deserves to be hit, threatened, manipulated. You know, you're not to blame for the abuse, and you didn't cause it. An abuser is an abuser. And I, you know what? I've learned that as part of my journey, part of why, at least I'm speaking for myself, but it's kind of, it's hitting, I'm thinking I'm hearing something similar from you. You know, we see our part, or at least we perceive it as our own part, and I know that kept me from seeking help because I couldn't call myself a victim for the longest time, you know. I in my situation, I was never that woman that was curled up in the ball in the corner. Man, I went head-to-head with my abuser, and it damn mm-hmm. near almost got me killed twice last year. Literally killed. And, you know, I think that, you know, there's a stereotype of, you know, this woman being, you know, battered and hit and curled up and just trying to, and that is very real. But there are other forms of that. And I think because of that reason, I had a really hard time recognizing and accepting, giving myself permission to call myself an abuse victim. Or, yes, I am a victim of domestic violence because, man, I fought back. I fought hard, you know. And I'm not saying that's the right or wrong thing to do. Of course, you know, anytime that anyone puts their hands on somebody else, it's not the right decision, okay? Even, you know, mm-hmm. it's not. So But without, let's take judgment out of it and just say that it was very hard for me to seek help and walk in there and say, you know what, I'm an abuse victim. When, you know, part of the abuse that was existing in my home was manipulating it like I brought it on myself.
Yeah.
Or, you know, example, my second husband would walk up to me and he had this way of inducing violence into our home. Like, I remember this one time he walked up to me and he was just in a foul mood. And I don't remember exactly what was said or how it was said, but I do remember him being right in my face, us both standing up. He got in my space and he spit at me. He spit in my face and he was within arm reach, and I pushed him off me, and that was a go for him. Oh, well, you put your hands on me, Melissa, and boom, all of a sudden his position is that he's defending himself. You know, and that kind of stuff made me crazy. And it made me question my own self, you know, because on one hand he's like, well, you know what, you hit me first. Well, you know, it's a traumatic, confusing, abusive, manipulated situation that is so unhealthy, you know, and that kind of manipulative behavior was just the way things worked around here. And it left me spinning. It left me spinning going, well, wait a minute, am I the abuser? You know?
Yeah. It's like a big game like that. I'm just like, this is messed up. Like, I was trying to figure it out for so long. Like, and I learned a lot that it was the term gaslighting.
Yeah, like, gaslighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go on. Sorry, you excited me.
Well, yeah. That's like where it's turned. It's like that manipulative behavior that is, you know, that happens, and then it's turned
back. They set
back,
you up
and then
you look crazy, or to make you think you look crazy, or make you think you are crazy. Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that word up.
Yeah. So I'm unfamiliar, and I don't want to. So, like, for instance, I'm going to go back to Michelle for a second. I remember, you know, Michelle being the person that she is. And you're right, she's a little bit different because she'll question things. But she's intellectually questioning things. She's emotionally questioning things in a logical way. So not in, like, an unstable way. So it's just a healthy way, let's say. And then I know her nature would be, obviously, as she's having children and trying to patch together this relationship, the teacher in her comes out. You know, the mentor in her comes out. The self-development person in her comes out. Like, how do we change this? How do we fix this? Let's fix what's broken here, and eventually, you get to the point where I'm like, Michelle, there's nothing to fix here. This is not something that's in your hands. You're not going to be able to do this. He doesn't want to be fixed. You know, these things are. It's just the way it is. Eventually, you're going to have to realize that if you don't get out, you're going to be destroyed because you're destroying yourself in the process. And I saw the changes. I saw it where, like, I'm watching a woman crumble, literally die, you know, mentally, you know, going mentally, like Groundhog's Day. One day is the same
it
as the next after the next.
It is a spiritual death as well.
Absolutely. Week after week and month after month. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was really painful to watch. So, and I'm going to come back to that gaslighting term. So because I'm a little bit unfamiliar with that, so, and there might be some people in the listening audience that might not be familiar with that term, what does that term mean? Like, what is that term? I've heard it, haven't worried about researching it because I haven't been a victim of it. So what does gaslighting mean?
Well, without having a nice, clean definition right in front of me, like off the top of my head, and we started to describe that a second ago, is that there is a way that an abuser can induce a certain response in you and manipulate the situation around so that it will make you question your own sanity. And use the example that I was talking about when Michelle offered that definition up, which was perfect, you know, where he would spit and I would shove him off me. And then that gave him permission to throw a punch or a kick or whatever. But he was defending himself. That form of manipulation, I've given you one instance. But let's not look at it on just a micro level. Look at it on a macro level where this is a way of life and you never know what's coming next, and there he's talking to people and family, justifying his own behavior, and using that kind of gaslighting method, okay, so that he's setting himself up to look like the victim, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
In the meantime, where you're becoming, the abused is becoming increasingly more isolated, meaning we don't have that family and friend support that we used to, because these abusers, that's part of their MO, man. They want to get you alone so that you've got nobody but them. And they are feeding
you. And our credibility. Our credibility. And our credibility is like nothing.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
At least we are made to feel that way. And that's part of the abuse. That's part of how the control takes place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we're sitting here going, well, wait a minute. Is it my fault? Am I the abuser? Did I bring this on?
That's why I would be in touch with Peter, trying to get his feedback. Like, what am I doing wrong here? The nights that I would be, you know, like texting Peter and being like trying to get his feedback on it, and he would be like, and that's when Peter, when you just talked about how you came back, you would come back and you'd be like, I don't see that this, you're doing anything wrong, you know, and I'm just like, but I must be, because I keep on going back to doubting myself. It's
and
the
that's
worst.
Part of the abuse, though, because I think what Peter was saying earlier, we're not responsible. An abuse victim is not responsible for anybody's behavior but your own, right? Any person is not responsible. We are powerless over people. Okay, if that person is an abuser and they're intent on abusing you, controlling us, there's nothing that we can do or say, and we can't fix it. You know, if it is a decision, and that was, oh my God, that was the hardest thing for me to accept that I learned in the Women's Center through counseling and therapy was he's making a decision to treat you this way. And I was like, no. In fact, my abuser, my second husband, has a very serious drug problem, and it was after a relapse that a lot of this behavior became present in our home. So it wasn't always – some of the signs were there, but that's for another show, okay? But I used to say, well, you know what? It's the drugs. It's the alcohol. It's this – and they would say to me, it may be making it worse. But he's making the choice. He's not doing that to everybody. He's not doing it to his coworkers. He's not doing it to his mother. He's not doing it to his friend. He's doing it to you. And, man, that having to accept that my own husband, you know, is making a choice to hurt me, man, that denial kept me in that relationship long. I didn't want – who wants to believe that, you know?
Right.
Who wants to believe that? There are so many stages of denial and leading to acceptance that I think we have to go through before we actually seek help. And that's just getting there, you know, because who wants to believe our own reality?
And when we were speaking in preparation to doing our very first radio show, I told you 30 minutes would go by faster than you could imagine. Well, it's already done.
Yeah.
But we're going to go into overtime. So just so you know, we're going to keep talking. You know, we'll give it another 15 minutes because I told you, like, you guys are a little bit concerned, like, what are we going to talk about? I said, don't worry about that. We'll blow through it. I mean, we'll blow through this. 30 minutes is going to be over before you know it. And as for those people.
Maybe you should give us an hour.
Yeah, for those people listening in, you know, we're hearing from, you know, friends of ours, Melissa and Michelle. We're talking about domestic abuse and domestic violence and how it kind of, you know, the different stages and rambling topics, if you will, as we go through our very first radio show. But I say rambling topics only because there's so much to talk about. There's so much to talk about. There's talk about identifying it. There's talking about the actions that you take. There's talking about the spider web, if you will, of other things, gun violence. You know, because now you're talking about gun control, who should have them, who shouldn't. We're talking about drugs.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about kids. You know, you talk about work. You talk about ego. You talk about shame. You talk about victim blaming. There's a whole bunch of things. That's why we're going to run a whole series of these issues. And we hope that at any given point for some might need some help, they catch on to this. You know, at any point, you just kind of grab on with your fingernails if you need it. And you just say, okay, now I'm engaged, and now I can start to do something. So let's talk a little bit about, you'll allow yourself, I'll say it like this, even though it's not correct, you'll allow yourself to be completely destroyed until you get outside help. It's really hard to fix this yourself. I'll share with a little bit about my personal background with that. My son was addicted to opioids. I live in the state of Florida, and opioids are big here. Like, the pill mills are really big in Florida, and the drugs of choice, which were easy to get for the kids, were the opioids, and they're very addictive. And my son got addicted to them. And that was the toughest thing in the world, because I realized that the addiction had him. Drugs are as close to Satan as you can get. So the addiction had him. I lost my son to the addiction. And you'd say, did he die? No, he didn't die. The drugs got him. And for that period of time, the drugs really had him. And when I was going through it, I'm like, I can't fix this. Like, there was a helplessness. Now, I'm the guy who runs the business, right? I'm the guy who's sales manager. You know, I fix everything. We go over 20 creative possible solutions and stuff, and all my exercises and sales training. I can't fix this. There's nothing there's nothing I can do. And then I looked at him, and I said, there's nothing he can do. Like, we are totally helpless in this thing. We need help. And it wasn't until that outside intervention and support, at least for my situation regarding to this issue, that I found that if that didn't happen, there had to be that intervention. And for me, it had to do with me putting him in jail. But I didn't put him in jail. I called the cops, and they put him in jail. And as a result of that, they had drug court, which was a government-supervised kind of a thing, which, by the way, government-supervised thing had lots of blemishes, really corrupt. You know, you're dealing with the prison industrial complex, all the injustices. But there was something about that really horrible, very not good system that saved him. So once he was able to grab onto it and said, that's it, I'm done. Like, but there had to be. Like, he was sliding down that slippery slope. Something had to catch. If you're grabbing my picture, something had to catch, and that catch was outside help.
Consequences. So, it was consequences first, and that is that is a very painful thing to watch when it's a loved one. But sometimes the best thing that we can do is let them hit bottom, and what that really means is consequences take place, because we're powerless. You know, and an addict is powerless over their drugs and alcohol. But there is a way out. There is a way out. But the way out begins with the decision to get out.
Right. So what are some of the ways out, if I could use your words, for people in the situation that we're talking about now? What are some of those
violence
ways
or
out?
With addiction?
Yeah, domestic violence, abuse, things like that. What are some of those issues? Because it's kind of complicated. If you're a woman, you might be married, you have no place to go, you might have kids, you're worried about your children, you may not have money, so you're worried about financial support. It's really a catch-22 situation where I sometimes say you're only as free as your options. You really start to take a look at it, and it's easy to say, just leave, but that's not easy to do. So what are some of the options that people have?
Michelle, do you want to go or you want me to go?
You can go. I mean, unless you want me to.
Just offering.
No, go ahead.
Everybody's situation is unique. And being ready to change is a very personal decision. Whoever the person is has to decide how ready they are. Because nothing will work if you're not ready. And I think that I read that a lot of the time, it's 6 or 7 times that an abused individual will go back to their abuser before they leave it for good, or something worse happens. The police, I've heard of occasions, and I've experienced occasions where it could be very helpful. I have also heard of times when, you know, it's a bit of a disappointment, but a necessary evil, you know. Charges cannot be filed, and you can't get legal assistance unless you call the cops and press charges. It's not real to the system until that happens. So an individual has to decide, you know, how risky it is or how comfortable they are with that situation. You know, my second husband was on probation for a drug-related charge. And so I was very reluctant for a long time to call the police because, you know, if anything sticks there, it could actually revoke his probation. He would go to prison. So and he actually used that to his advantage, you know. So calling the police is one thing. There are also, you call the domestic violence hotline, and these advocates can give you a lot of resources as well. Do you have a local women's center? Okay. Not just a shelter, but usually these women's centers will have sheltering services like emergency placement services. But in addition to that, some ongoing counseling, legal resources. In the town that we live in, the Women's Center offers some free or seriously discounted legal services to help with divorce, immigration issues that could be a result, that could be have an effect on immigration services or immigration status if they were to leave the abuser. I've heard it's very common that that take place. One place that I know is a huge advocating non-for-profit agency for that specific issue, regardless of your faith, is the Catholic Charities. If you go to CatholicCharities.org, it's a national charity service that for both refugees and immigrants will actually help in those situations and provide legal services and sometimes housing for those people whose sponsors, immigration sponsors, are the abusers, and they feel very trapped in those situations where they're not able to leave the home because they will be their fear of being deported, okay, back to their country of origin. So there are services specifically for that issue, regardless of the country, for both refugees and immigrants. So there, you know what, we could dedicate a couple of shows just to the different resources that are available. Support groups. If you have the ability to go to like a women's center domestic violence support group or sexual assault, because, you know, sexual violence is also unfortunately a very common part of intimate relationships that have domestic violence. Those support groups, man, when I started going there, and this is where Michelle and I met, I felt such relief that I was in a safe room where I could say what was really happening and no one would question me. It was the only place in the beginning that I could go and talk. And people would listen and go, they'd be nodding their heads going, yeah. No judgment. No telling you what to do. No nothing. It was just, oh, wow, these people get it. I'm not crazy and I'm not alone, you know. So, Michelle, what was your experience with like that?
Yeah, like it feels like a different world when you go into a support group like that, because everywhere else I just felt like I was judged and misunderstood. And when you go into support groups, it's like people actually are on that, they understand, you feel understood. And then when you leave the support group and then you go back into the world, it's like back into being misunderstood again. So it's like really, it's the support groups I definitely have, they've worked for me, like in that, they've helped me through things like that I,
definitely. You know, one of the things that I remember the most, like when I first went into the support group, they said, because I would ask questions. I'm like a pretty bold person. I'd be like, well, what do you do? You know, do you tell people to leave? Do you give advice? Do you this? And their manner, their philosophy was, we're going to meet you where you are. And whatever you need, if it's just to be listened to, we'll listen to you. If you need shelter services, we'll get that started for you. If you need, you know what I mean? What I loved about that is that there was no, you didn't have to be afraid of walking in there and having somebody show up and, you know, and tear your life apart. Like, you could just walk in there and just be a broken down, abused individual that needs help, and that's okay. And that's what they will deal with. Now, of course, and everything's confidential, right? The only exception to that is if you're talking about, you know, you make a threat of suicide or homicide, right, or disclose some abuse, those standard five things, you know, abuse of an elderly person, a child, or neglect, or a pet, or those kind of things. So with the exception of those legal mandated reporting situations, you know, they're, and that's up to you how you're going to handle that. They just welcome you in and help you. And I just, you know, I remember going in there one day after a sexual assault night. And I walked in a couple days later because I was cracking. Like, I felt myself just, I was losing it on the inside. And I walked into the women's center and I went up to the desk. And I was already in a, I had already been, you know, you have to walk in and sort of be accepted, if you will, like paperwork on you so that they know who you are. And that's part of how they keep the place safe for survivors, right? They always know who's in there. So I go up there and I'm like, I'm having a really rough time. And you could tell on my face and my voice, I'm going to lose it. I need to talk to somebody. I'm going to lose it. I'm about to lose it. And they had to see it on me. And they literally went and got a counselor and just put me in a room and unloaded for about 30 or 40 minutes because I felt like I was going to explode, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of me starting to receive some additional services from the Houston Area Women's Center. From the Women's Center. Because I went there for help and I unloaded, and then they met me where I was with that issue too, you know? So those are, what other places? What are some other resources, Michelle? Those are my three ones.
Yeah, all great information. We're going to be running out of time. So let's do this. Let's wrap up the first radio show, and then we'll give you some other stuff as well. But the information we provided here, I think, is excellent because we could do a Jerry Lewis marathon as far as all the stuff relative to the things that people can do. And then, but the most important part, and maybe the part I just want you to wrap up is, there's the one thing is there's thoughts, if you will, of suicide. And let's just touch on that real quick, because that's like, at any given vulnerable point, that's a real possibility for some people. So does anybody want to touch on that lightly? I'm only going to give it a couple of minutes, but the reality is, can we touch on that and how that's really not a good option? Yeah, how that's really not a good option, because I don't think we could, you know, we never know who's listening and we never know what they're thinking, and we give them hope, but we just got to make sure we nail that one down, that is not an option. Like, no matter how dark it feels, that is not an option. So over to you.
Yeah, well, I have experienced definitely have always through all this with suicidal thoughts. And I have always, what's kept me going is my children, knowing that I don't want to do that to my children. But I, that is definitely common to feel. And I'm learning that through trauma therapy that I'm taking that, and there's a survey I actually take every time that I go, and it helps me, that survey actually helps me to remind myself that those feelings of not wanting to be alive are common in when you're dealing with trauma. And that's the whole point of, that's the whole purpose of doing the trauma therapy. Does that make sense?